This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2019, held in Montgomery, Indiana, on March 1 and 2.
We're going to begin. I did ask a few minutes ago that we would fill the first six rows. Thank you. I'm also wondering, why are we so interested in this darker side of humanity? Do we really have that many dysfunctional homes there? I don't know. Here we go. This is intended to be a discussion. I really am not intending to be the only one talking here. And I would hope that the size of the group here, maybe you can retain your... a little more anonymous in giving a comment. Use the size of the group to encourage you rather than discourage you. I had imagined a much smaller group where we would sort of be sitting in a circle and that type of thing. Dysfunctional families, dysfunctional homes. I guess I started thinking about the years that I related to school as a teacher and as a board member. And it really starts working on your emotions pretty quick. I guess, after all, it is about the child. It's about the children. And these children did not do anything to get them into the situation that they're in. I wasn't born shipwrecked. I was born into a loving Christian home. And I'm supposing that most of you here would say the same thing. As you take an honest look at the circumstances, the congeniality into where God placed you, we've been blessed. We've been terrifically blessed. Many, many of us have been. But like I said, some children are born botched. And I have an adopted niece where she struggles tremendously, not so much because of a dysfunctional home that she's in now, but because of the irresponsibility of her mother, and she's born with alcohol fetal syndrome. And struggling with that. Like I said, the home she's in now is certainly a functional home, but she's a product of the poor choices of other people. If there's anything that happens here in this room, I want our compassion to be stirred. I want our hearts to be enlarged for these kind of people.
Try to get a little closer.
Question that I'm going to ask you to speak into. I have on the board. We want to make a profile of dysfunctional homes. Now, this is not necessarily a cohesive profile. I mean, the things that we put up there are not necessarily going to be building on each other to make a profile all found in one home. Okay, but we want to just talk about different features or, you know, things that maybe you've observed that these are dysfunctionalities. We'd like to build that profile here in just a moment. Three times in the scriptures, it's said, for the poor are always with you. And we can identify those types. In kindness, we can do this. The ones that Jesus himself has called poor. The intention of this topic, of this discussion, is not to make us pumped up and feel like we're wise guys and now we have the answers. We don't. That's another thing I wish you would walk out of this room sensing that you didn't get all the answers. Because I believe that when you relate to these kind of situations, you need the wisdom that's from above that comes to you on a case-by-case, daily, minute-by-minute even, basis. That's what we need to relate well to dysfunctional homes. Right, so what would you say? I have a cup of coffee here. I'm going to drink it. What would you say answers this question? I'll write it up on the board.
One or both parents have emotional or mental difficulties.
More, please. Thank you.
Unfaithfulness from one or both of the parents, morally.
Thank you.
Abuse.
Negligence. So let's flush that one out a little more. What types of negligence?
Absent father.
Okay. I visited a school recently where the dad was raising the family single-handedly. More.
Lack of leadership.
Along with that, a skewed headship authority where mom takes control.
You're doing a great job, but I can't write and drink coffee at the same time. Continue.
Denial of responsibility. Denial of responsibility.
Does all this come under parental dysfunctionality? Leave it blank. Or.
Broken relationships due to maybe the father being angry.
Children being asked to take on the role of a spouse. Like, the mother may not be able to share with the father, so she finds a son to confide in.
Word. You're on something there.
Yeah, but I'm not sure what the word or two is.
Too much money.
Drugs and alcohol.
You forgot one, not enough.
What?
Not enough money, financial hardening.
Wrong priorities.
Insecurity.
Worship has been forgotten.
This one kind of sums up a lot of them, but lack of discipline, undisciplined life.
That's a big one.
Along with denial of responsibility is deference of responsibility. If I can get a doctor to say, we need medication, nothing I can do, none of my problem.
Really, that's what else can you say when you look at this like that? And these things are real, and they're in our schools across North America. They are. There it is. I think we could add to the list. Let me just discuss briefly this. Some of this thing of emotional deficiencies. So far as when a person is born, there's three needs of every person. One is attention. Another is appreciation. And in modern psychology, they would say gifts. I think we would probably say maybe prayer. And with in a functional Christian home, a child receives those in balance. Appreciation, attention, and prayers. Right? And when those things are missing, something is missing in the emotional center of that person. There's a tank that is not filled. Worse than that, that tank, it's a vacuum. And because of that vacuum, there's poor behaviors that indeed do make problems for us at school. That's the one thing I'm thinking of. Another thing I was thinking of as I was writing this up here on the board, how at one point my father, when he served on the school board, got a phone call from a parent, and this parent was very disturbed and letting him know in no uncertain terms how the school is on the wrong track. And the teacher has lost control of the students, and the teacher is not respected, and the teacher really ought to be fired, and so on. And she was saying so very loudly. Various times through the phone call, she needed to stop her conversation with my dad and yell to her own children to tell her children to shut up, and so on. I would say that's a dysfunctional home. Lack of discipline, lack of schedule. Children coming to school without breakfast, without the haircut. There's a range of types of issues here, and if we want to put a dash here, like a dashboard or a gauge, and with a pointer, we would have on this side, we'd have a slightly annoying. And over here we'd have almost criminal. Your situation is going to fall somewhere on that continuum between slightly annoying and almost criminal. But actually, it redlines on criminal. And that happens too sometimes. All right, where do you want to go from here? How do we relate to it? I think I'm just going to leave this list on the board, and I'm just going to open it up. What would you share with this group? We're here, we're needing inspiration, we're needing encouragement, maybe we're needing answers. And like I said before, I was not anticipating the size of the group, what it is, but just go ahead and speak up. And let's share with each other about what are some things that we can do and that we must do to be able to relate well to dysfunctional homes. Yes?
So, in my experience, when this happened, and a parent later came back to me and said, what was the one word that encapsulated your school? She told me it was the school care. And then I saw the child coming out of a dysfunctional home, out of a vehicle, you know, angry at mom and dad and sibling, whatever. The moment they walked in the classroom, after about 6 months in the school, that the whole atmosphere and attitude of the child changed, and they could be normal for 6 hours in the day. When they got back into the vehicle, the dad says, how is he today? He was a mess this morning. And I said, he was great at school.
Are you hearing some principles? Okay, I am gonna write this on the board, okay? Let's just jot it down. What did you hear there?
Caring heart.
Mm-hmm.
Structure.
Structure. N word, a word that starts with an N. Finish it.
Normality.
Safety.
A healthy feeling of self-worth.
Mm-hmm. You heard that? I think it was in there, right? Walking along with.
Giving the students time that the parent didn't.
Is it okay for the teacher to comb, let's say, a second grade girl's hair every day? Is that okay?
That's where it's at on the dial.
And where it's at on the dial.
That situation really is.
Okay, it depends. Thank you. Now we know. No, really and truly, that really is about the best answer. There's a whole other question. A lot of what we just dealt with, very, very valid, but actually is slightly off topic. What was the title for this? Dysfunctional
homes.
Oh. Okay, is it correct to say that we, as a school, is this, where would this come if you were to put it, or to rate it in its accuracy? The best way to help a dysfunctional home is to help the child. You thumbs up with that? Thumbs sideways? Thumbs down? Thumbs down. Down. The best way to help a dysfunctional home is to help the child. Okay, let me restate it. The best way for a school to help a dysfunctional home is to help the child. Now is it? Give me some feedback. Still thumbs down, all right, then yeah, go ahead.
I'll tell you what we did once. We had a sixth grader that was very dysfunctional, and our principal knew the home. So he called for a meeting. He called me there as a board member, and the mom and the dad and the board. We sat down for probably an hour and a half. And he explained to the boy and the parents what has to happen in school. And he knew the home well, and he also addressed the issues at home in a very fine way. It was a very good meeting, and it didn't change overnight, but the boy did survive school. I say he survived. He never did real well because of what was happening at home. But we were able to do it there.
Probably thinking many things at once.
Yes. The fix-all answer would be it depends again. Sometimes it would probably be wrong for a school to step in and address some of the issues in the home, and so we're probably all picturing a little different issues. I taught at a school one time in another culture, in Central America, where almost all the children that I had came from dysfunctional homes. One twins actually came to school all week without knowing where their dad was. They figured he was probably laying dead in a ditch somewhere, and they found him later on. Very dysfunctional, and I'm not sure. I think the only thing to do in that situation was try and shore up the children as best you could. And then hopefully we're not dealing with situations like that on a normal basis within our Anabaptist communities. But as a school, I think a lot of times that's probably you're riding on doing what we can for the children. I don't know who else is listening, but maybe what we wish we could do would actually be overstepping our boundaries.
Okay, I would like to give at least give a suggestion or a projection here. I personally feel that teachers, that's one category. School board is another category. And church leadership is yet another. Okay, so... Yeah, I'm thinking too many things at once here as well. I think as a general operating principle that teachers ought to have in relating to dysfunctional homes is when they discuss with the parents, they need to talk about the what and not the why about the situation. The what, not the why. Let me illustrate. We had something more of a slightly annoying side of things that was occurring in a school where I taught the children. Came from a home that they weren't really being raised, they were just kind of growing up. They were member families, very, very admirable in many ways, but the parenting skills were perhaps a little lower than average. I don't know how to describe this. I'm just trying to say it kindly and honestly.
The children maybe were a bit neglected, but yet there were many things that we could learn from them, if you understand what I'm saying. The children came to school with their barn boots, the same boots that they milked the cows with were coming to school, and they'd line them up with the rest of the children, and it was a problem. Okay, it was slightly annoying the first and second and third time that it happened. But when wintertime came, then this stuff would be frozen on their boots and would make long rivulets of across the hallway. this was making a problem in school. Now, let's go back to what I was demonstrating. As a teacher, the teacher should, I think at that point, there should have been some communication with the hood, right? Because it was actually affecting the way the other students were looking at those children. Those kind of things obviously will. For the teacher to go into that conversation on a why premise, it's going to sound a little bit like this. You guys, we need to buy two pairs of boots for your children. You're not thinking. Come on, wake up. That would be more of a why premise. Or that's, of course, very direct and very much in response to what's on the floor. But it was true that the children were a bit neglected. It was true that their hygiene had issues, and so on. It would be much better to say, I just thought you might want to know what is happening at school. In the morning, the children's boots are thawing out. It's making a problem in the hallway. That's what's happening. And what I have found as a teacher, very often the parents at that point will switch into a why. If you're invited into a why type of conversation, that is completely different than using that as your point of entry. I would also suggest this also works on the second level up of this whole hierarchy of school management and administration. As a school board, if you need to discuss a problem at school, that something that's actually causing a problem at school relating to the dysfunctional families, please, please start with the what. And oftentimes, if you are loving and kind and compassionate, they will invite you into the why. And I'm not here to advise ministry, but I think the same thing actually might apply there too. Okay, what are you thinking? What did you want to, what else can we put up here on the board?
Question I had, where's the ministerial team at this point? You know, if there's a problem in school, there's maybe a problem in church, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But where's the ministerial team at? Should they not be involved?
It seems to me that another principle here is there are some things we're just going to have to let go. If you're going to be a shepherd, you have to be able to stand the smell of sheep. Really. And there are some things that...
Leave it be.
You heard about the teacher that sent a note home with the Rufus, and it just simply said, Rufus stinks. Please give him a bath. And the parent sent a note home, not home, sent a note back to school that said, Rufus ain't no rose. Don't smell it. It relates to things more than just hygiene. So, but at some point in any given situation, with all that input data on your massive formula to decide what to do, you know, I really think that there needs to be somewhere we need to determine, is this making a problem at school? Is it truly making a problem at school? Okay, if it's truly making a problem at school, then address it. Now, I'm coming around to this question, when does ministry get involved, wherever that was raised? If it's a school problem, then let's not overinflate the situation by getting the ministry involved too soon. I would hope that our boards are proactive enough that many of these things can be handled on a school level. When the ministry gets involved, it would seem that when we understand what charge and responsibilities the ministry have, well, that would need to be having implications as well for the church.
Okay,
Stick my neck out here a little bit, but in our school, we separate the church's responsibility and the school's responsibility. Most times, if you're honest with yourself, the church is probably dealing with the same issues of a dysfunctional home. There's no sense in us ganging up on it. Let us deal with the problems that it's creating in school, and let the church deal with the problems it's creating in the church. If you gang up and, you know, well, I talk to the board and they say this is going on, so that supports my evidence over here, it just feels like they're attacked.
See, if you get the church involved too quickly, it really, we need to be careful that we don't paint that family or paint ourselves into a corner. Because really, in our communities, our church leadership is kind of the, please understand me when I say this, but they are kind of the last court of appeals. I mean, they're kind of the Supreme Court. If you're at outs with the school and you're at outs with the church, if you're at outs with the community, and you're out, right? So it behooves us to try to work through issues that are truly school issues on a school level and keep it there. Yes?
If it's just about Johnny's stinky boots or him needing a bath, then please don't go to the ministry.
But if
Dad was abusing Rose, or if he hasn't been home, or, you know, if it's a spiritual issue that really needs to be addressed, then go to the church, and the church and the school board can work together. They don't both need to go, but they need to be aware of what's happening, and the call needs to be made from one place or the other.
I think we would agree with that. Were you able to hear the comment in the back, basically? Pretty much? I want to talk to you just a little bit about that word normalcy, normal, structure. I really think that as what the school can do, having said what I did about, let me just make myself plain. I'm really not sure that the school is positioned to change the family very much. The school is basically going to need to deal with the fruit of the dysfunctional family. And maybe in dealing with the fruit, the school, I'm talking about a strict interpretation of the school. Hopefully, you know, better behaviors can be seen and adopted. But I think sometimes we don't realize how much normalcy contributes to a stable individual. Even discipline, as in punishment, whether it's corporal punishment, whether it's relinquishing privileges, but you know what it says there in Hebrews 12 about sons and chastisement. If you read Hebrews 12, it says that if God deals with you as sons, then he chastises you. That's what it's saying, right? And if you're not chastised of the Lord, then you're an illegitimate son, you're a bastard. It's what it says. There was some acquaintances of ours that weren't able to have their own children biologically. They were adopting children, doing a great job. And they had a five-year-old boy that was pretty perceptive. There were older children in the family that were already adopted. The adoption process was complete. One day, they went into town and completed his adoption process. Now he was a full son. And it wasn't that they made a huge deal over it, but they did make a deal about it because it is significant. Later on that afternoon, he did something completely uncharacteristic, and he directly disobeyed the parents, just blatant disrespect and disregard and disobedience. He received his first spanking that day, corporal punishment. And they asked him, why did you do that? And he said, I wanted to know if I was a son. You see, the older children got spanked. He didn't. What I'm suggesting is there are some situations by giving those children from dysfunctional homes a big break is actually a disservice. Please implore God about these things. We need his wisdom. We really do. I'd like to tell you another story. Perhaps you read the book or know of the book, The First Days of School by Harry Wong. Are you familiar with that book? Right, it's a book a lot for teachers and so on, classroom management. Somewhat of a poster child for that book, a poster teacher, I guess, in this case, is a woman by the name Sharonda Saroyer or something like that. But she sort of models everything that's in that book, or she incorporates it very well. She had a very, very difficult home life. Missing dad, her mom was ill, she had a job after school as a 16-year-old. I mean, her world was just really, really messed up, probably more messed up than most of the students that are coming to our conservative communities. Her mom at times had asthma attacks and whatnot, and it was nothing for her to get a phone call or whatever notification at school saying your mom's in the hospital and go to the hospital after school and that sort of stuff. And there she was trying to, you know, do her schoolwork, hold a job, all balance all these things. One day when she was going to her job, this was after she was out of school, the first year out of school, she was going to her job and she got the call that she dreaded, and that is her mom died. Her illness had gotten the best of her. And she did what I suppose any 16-year-old would do, having received the word in that type of scenario. She had a meltdown. I mean, she just lost it. And didn't know what to do. So there, what would you do if you would meet this young lady on the street? And let's say you're a police officer. And she's crying her eyes out. And what do you do? Well, the police asked her, where do you want to go? She said, I want to go to school. Now remember, I told you she was out of school. And the policeman said, well, what school? Well, she said, where I went as a high schooler. They took her to school. It was before school started. And there she received a caring heart. Right? Now think about the implications of what I just shared with you. That's, to me, that's a moving story. There had to be compassion there. Jude 12 says, and some have compassion making a what?
Difference.
Little girl was born by the name of Anne in 1866. She grew up in a very impoverished home. She had severely damaged eyesight due to childhood sickness. She had a very strong-willed personality. Her mother Alice died when Anne was only 8 years old. She clashed severely with her abusive father. The father later abandoned the family. So Anne was sent to an almshouse, which was notoriously dirty and run down and crowded. Being the strong-willed child that she was and all the history that had built her 8 traumatic years, she was completely uncontrollable. And this being before our day, they did what you do, the only thing they know to do, I guess, knew to do at that point with such a one. They put her in basically a cell, like jail, and locked her in a room because they couldn't deal with her. And one of the workers took special interest in Anne. Anne wasn't eating, she wasn't talking, she would scream, she would throw herself around the room, but this worker thought, we got to reach this girl somehow, she's going to die. She had already died in many ways. So that worker, the next day, she brought a plate of brownies and set them outside the bars of the room. And she didn't touch them. The next day, she put brownies back there again. That day, they were gone. Little by little, this worker worked her way in to Anne's heart. She started delivering the brownies through the door. Then she started asking Anne to sit in her lap before she would get the brownies, and so on. And the thing kept on developing and developing and developing. until Anne became a basically normal, well-balanced person. The Anne of which I speak is Anne Sullivan. Who is Anne Sullivan? Helen Keller's teacher. Can you write some more stuff on the board?
Listen. Listen.
What do you do when it seems like all those things? We had a girl in school, started in sixth grade probably, issues with makeup, that type of appearance things, dresses. You know, we work with the child. There was two of the teachers that really took an interest in her. They would meet with her periodically. When they had student devotions, they would meet with her individually and try to work with her, to help her. And she was in eighth grade this year. I had a discussion with the father before school started what would happen if we had to make up issue again this year. And I had to do the hardest thing I ever did. I expelled an eighth grade girl. What do you do?
I think there are those times when we need to realize that even Jesus Christ can't help everyone. If they don't want help, if they don't respond to his, I mean, he is the one that always gets it right so far as compassion and care and extending help. But a lot of people reject his offers as well. Yes.
So one thing that is a guiding principle for me, specifically thinking about this instance, we're not a public school. We don't take everybody. And there's instances where we have to be honest. The school is not the place. We have 15 other families that need our attention. The school's not the place to help this child. Let's go to the community and find somebody that's willing to give brownies every day. We're not that place.
I know of a community that has multiple Mennonite communities in the same geographical area where there was a needy family that wanted to enroll their children to school, and the one school said, we're not equipped. Me looking on, I would have thought they had more resources, but I didn't know the whole story, obviously. They just said, we're not equipped. We can't take you on right now. But they actually recommended another school that I would have said, looking on, was less equipped. That less equipped school, you know, my own incorrect judgment, took them in and did minister to that family and is having a reasonable measure of success. Right? Your point was, again...
We're not a public school. We don't have to take everything.
We can't help them all, right? We need to give a good, honest assessment when it, you know, we're in that enrollment question. Are we really equipped to deal with this? And there's no sense upsetting the apple cart, the whole apple cart, for one apple. Did I say that?
Hurry.
Go ahead.
But at the same time, you don't have to throw them to the wolves.
Okay.
You could, as a concerned person, find somebody, help them find somebody that can offer help. And we've expelled church member children before. We can't help, but here's who you need to talk to.
Yeah, the whole terms of excommunicating in the New Testament, you know, we have come to call excommunicating, is not throwing one under the bus.
I was just going to say, I hope in our churches and schools that this dysfunctional home problem is a minority and not a majority of our schools. So as school boards, we have a responsibility to the all the patrons of the school. It is our responsibility to keep structure, normalcy, and safety. And when that is threatened by a dysfunctional home, we can dismiss that to hold to that standard of structure, normality, and safety. I think that's the board's responsibility.
That's right. And I would, right along with that, I would strongly urge the board to stay in touch with your teachers. They are, after all, the ones that are engaging these students on an hourly basis. And it can be energy draining work. When Jesus dealt with people that were needy, Jesus himself said that, "Who touched me? Virtue went out of me." And this is a virtue, whatever, you know what I mean? It virtue goes out of your teachers, and you need to stay there as a support role for sure. Another thing that I think that, along with this, as far as what boards can do, is be sure that you have a communication chain, have it clearly understood who the teacher should be talking to, and you know, when some of these things get messy, maybe the teacher, you know, should be following a different channel of communication than what we would normally. Maybe there needs to be one contact person in the board and that kind of thing. But by all means, support your teachers, or your teacher may burn out unnecessarily. What time does this session close?
About 3 minutes ago.
About three minutes ago it closed?
15.
Oh, okay, I wasn't aware of that. I think it had something on the last page. Yeah, you're ready, set. Thank you so much for your participation. Let's look to God for wisdom. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, which gives all men liberally. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.